You're here on Joy 94.9, Sunday Arts Magazine. And we've got our next guest in the studio. That's Noah Reisman. Welcome, Noah. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks. And you?
I'm very well. Now, Noah, you're the co-curator of an exhibition that's coming up, Serving in Silence. But as David mentioned off air, we just want to just get a little bit of an idea where how you got started in the arts and your background. So that's really what we want to have a bit of a talk about to start with, if you don't mind. So.
Sure. There's slight false advertising there, though. I'm not really in the arts, and I think it would be an insult to people in the arts to consider me part of the arts.
Well, I suppose if you're co-curating.
I am co-curating. So I'm actually a historian. Okay. I'm an academic historian at Australian Catholic University here in Melbourne. And the exhibition Serving in Silence is a history exhibition that's telling the history of LGBTI military service in Australia from the Second World War until the present. How I and the co-curators are also academics, Shirlene Robinson from Macquarie University and Graham Willett from the Australian Lesbian and Gay Archives. And so how I got into this topic, we've been researching LGBTI military service for the last, I think we're on to 3 years now. My previous background, my PhD and postdoctoral research was on the history of Indigenous military service. And when I was doing my previous research project on Indigenous military service, it was 2012, and I interviewed an Aboriginal man who was ex-Air Force who was also gay. And he went on the record about his experiences as an Aboriginal man in the Air Force, but he only told me off the record about his experiences as a gay man in the Air Force. Now, when we did start this project, I should say I subsequently went back to him, convinced him to tell me the rest of the story on the record. And we even do have a few photos of him in the exhibition. But around the same time that I did that interview in 2012, there was this really tiny article that appeared in the Star Observer, which mentioned that it had been 20 years since Australia lifted the ban on gays and lesbians serving in the Defence Force. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm a historian, and I was like, oh, I don't really know anything about the history of LGBTI service here in Australia. We've all heard of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. We know quite a bit about the US, but we know nothing really about Australia.
I can hear an accent. Where are you from?
I grew up in the US, but I've lived in Australia the last 13 and a half years. I'm a dual citizen, but the accent doesn't go away.
Well, no, because where you go to school, that's your accent.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, like, what a great concept. What a great idea to delve into it. Because it would have been quite secretive, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. Well, yes and no. The short answer is yes, but some of the things we've uncovered is that until the 1970s, it was often, for men at least, for women it's a very different story, but for men serving until the 1970s, if you're discreet, there was often a blind eye turned. Especially in the Navy. There was often a blind eye turn.
And Air Force as well?
Oh. Well, let's just say the Air Force seems to have a lot more gay men in it than some of the other services. The blind eye seems to be across the board, but up until the mid-70s. But we've had more interesting stories from Navy people where they were a bit more open about it, let's say, than the other services.
Okay.
Yeah. The reason I mentioned women specifically separately there is one thing that has come out in the research is for the women's services, there were always anxieties about lesbianism. There was always this anxiety of, well, we need women in the services, but what kind of woman wants to be in the services? What kind of woman? Is it a masculine woman? And there were these concerns about the masculinization of the sex. So there was always anxieties about lesbians, and there were always witch hunts targeting lesbians in the services. That doesn't tend to extend to men until the mid-1970s.
Okay.
That said, there were men kicked out, of course, and there were men who still had to serve in silence. I'm not trying to say that it was, like, you know, wide open, totally serving, but if you were discreet, there tended to be a blind eye turned. Mm. There were cases of men who weren't so discreet or who got caught that, of course, were kicked out.
Yeah. So what is this exhibition telling us then?
It's telling us the evolution of policies from the Second World War till the present relating to LGBTI service. It's telling us the ways that the policies went from the sort of officially this is a no-no but we'll turn a blind eye through to really actively hunting and, I would argue, persecuting gays and lesbians through to a period after November of 92 of essentially tolerance but still not permitting transgender service, till a period after about 2005 where the ADF sort of evolves from just tolerance to actively trying to include and go out of its way to embrace lesbians, gays, and bisexuals. And from 2010, the ban on transgender is lifted. So there's the policy angle it's telling. There's the angle of how people actually live their lives in the services. So some of those stories I just mentioned before of it being if you were a man, sort of semi-tolerated if you were discreet, through to the sort of secrecy and the double lives they had to live, through to the brave pioneers in the 90s who were willing to come out when it was allowed, through to the present where people can be much more open. And of course, we're trying to get the nuances, the distinctions between experiences of men, experiences of women, experiences of transgender people in a variety of ways.
There would have been the situations which it was non-military, where, say, back in the 60s and 70s, there was partners, people were in a partnership with a fellow, you know, like, well, even somebody in the services and their partner outside, which that partner on the outside would have been totally not recognised if the person got killed in a war situation, and the family would have been brought in and that person would have been left on the outside. Have you covered that?
Interestingly enough, that doesn't tend to come up as much for the 60s and 70s. One thing from all the interviews, we've done quite a few, most of this project is based on policy documents and interviews with current and formerly serving members. Most of the, again, men, I emphasize, not women in this case, who served in the 60s and 70s were single. And a lot of them also didn't even realize they were gay at the time they were serving.
Okay.
And if they were having relationships, they weren't having the sort of long-term ones that you're describing. So that actually tended not to come across in the research until more so the 1990s, when actually you were allowed to serve openly, but they wouldn't recognize same-sex partnerships until 2005. So you actually do have cases in the 90s of people worried about this, and it really becomes an issue after East Timor, because that's when Australia is now more in active combat situations where someone could die. And then you see the first politicians who are sort of pushing for extension of partner benefits are actually the Democrats, and they're raising the issue of, we're now sending our men and women off into active combat zones, and the only rights that they have is they can be notified as next of kin. That was the right they had. They could be notified as next of kin, but you wouldn't get anything else.
Yeah, yeah.
But the ADF changed the policy on partner recognition at the very end of 2005. But even then, Veterans Affairs still did not recognize spouses for veterans pensions till the Rudd reforms were brought in 2009.
So the exhibition, which is at Melbourne City Library in Flinders Lane, what it's, Yola, what do you see? What is it that you actually go to see?
The main thing we've got is we've got a series of 18 panels that are sort of going both chronologically and thematically from the Second World War through to the present, examining various issues like the Second World War.
It's like a written word. Is that what you mean?
The panels are a mixture of, I guess I'm trying to describe it. Imagine yourself in a museum where you're looking and you see a sort of panel on the wall that has a bit of text, has images. We have pictures that people have loaned us. We have pictures of documents. So all of that's going on panels along the wall at the library.
I'm fascinated with the Second World War because, you know, like...
That's only a minor part of the exhibition.
Yeah, but it would have been, you know, like, I'm surprised you even found out anything because so many of the people would be dead now.
Well, the Second World War information, mostly my colleague Graham Willett, who's one of the other curators, has found, and that's not through oral testimonies. That said, I have interviewed one Second World War veteran who's still alive, but what he found was in the records, and it's mostly about Papua New Guinea. And what happened was the Americans wrote to the Australians complaining about all these Australian soldiers who were having sex with the Americans, and worse than that, were adopting the female position as the records are held. And then the documents sort of show of what happens next of them going after this group of 18 or so gay men in Papua New Guinea, and other information that's come out through some sort of memoirs that have been written over the years talk about sort of a bit of homosexual subcultures among the Australian soldiers in Papua New Guinea. It's not part of the exhibition because we could only do so much, but there is a really good book written by Yorick Small called Sex, Soldiers, and the South Pacific that examines this Papua New Guinea stuff in more detail, but also examines the sort of homosexual subculture going on in Brisbane during the Second World War. So if anyone, I do recommend that book. It's really good. It's the first book that's been written about anything involving LGBTI service in Australia.
And what's it called again?
Sex, Soldiers, and the South Pacific.
Right, by who?
Yorick Small, and Small is S-M-A-A-L.
Right, okay. Now go on.
We've got the panels. Yep. And then in addition to that, we're going to have a few glass display cases where some objects that people have loaned to us or donated us and some materials from the Australian Lesbian and Gay Archives will be on display. So, for instance, we have one Vietnam veteran has been kind enough to loan us his medals. One of the things I'm really excited about is a gentleman gentleman who served in the Navy in the early 1970s. There's this story that he went AWOL at one stage. He just sort of decided he was sick of the Navy. And while he went AWOL, he did get himself into a relationship. And he then wanted to move to New Zealand with his partner. But to move to New Zealand, he essentially was going to need to get a passport and all this sort of stuff. So he had to turn himself in, and he was punished, locked up in the brig in the Navy. And while he was in the brig, his partner was sending him letters. And he was sending his partner letters. And at first, they were on the letters being very cautious to be sort of gender neutral in how they were addressing them. But eventually, he made the mistake, although I think it might have been subconsciously not a mistake, of addressing one of the letters to Mr. And the Navy realized that he was gay. And so the way he put it in the interview, I'm trying to remember the exact way he put it, but he said they moved him to a sort of more isolated part of the brig, because I think the way you put it was maybe they were afraid they'd catch gay cooties. But they didn't actually prosecute him for homosexuality because he was discharging anyway. But he saved all of these letters that he was writing to this person. And so we've got these remarkable love letters that he was writing to his partner while he was in the brig in the Navy right before he was...
Not kicked out.
Well... he voluntarily discharged
right
before he left. And so some of those, depending on how the glass display case can arrange them, we'll try to put some of those in it. So we have things like that. And there's a bit of sort of paraphernalia from DefGLIS, which is the Defense LGBTI Information Service. They're the current group that represents serving members who are LGBTI. And I don't know what yet, but Graham texted me this morning, said he has a few other objects to put on display. So, well, mostly panels with text, images, and a bit of that. And there's also a projector that's going to be projecting just sort of a montage of photos that people have sent through to us, of showing just sort of pictures of people in service, ordinary LGBTI people.
And it's an incredible space. I literally saw it yesterday. Your exhibition is not there yet.
No, it's not. I'm well.
The space is bare, but it's ready for you guys. It looks incredible.
Oh, good. Yeah, I'm glad.
Beautiful. Yes.
And the wonderful thing is that Melbourne City Library, they're very supportive, and they usually do an exhibition every midsummer festival.
Oh, absolutely. That's why we went to them in the first place. And we went to them, it was either April or May of last year. And we said, hey, ALGA, Australian Lesbian and Gay Archives, has done exhibitions with you before. And they just jumped at it. They said, we love working with ALGA. We love doing stuff during midsummer. And this just sounds like a great exhibition.
Fantastic. And what's it called again?
It's called Serving in Silence, Australian LGBTI Military Service Since World War II. And dare I say a quick plug, it is here for midsummer. It's also going to be in Sydney for the week before Mardi Gras. Okay. So we'll have it in Sydney as well. Brilliant. And in fact, still need to confirm the details, but it will be on display in the defense headquarters in Canberra around Ida Hobbit in May.
Right. So
wonderful.
Yeah. That'll be fantastic.
You've done a good job.
Yeah.
thanks so much for coming in.
And you open on the 14th of January.
I think we technically open the 11th, but 11th, 14th, whatever day you want to call it. The formal launch, if you will, we're having actually is on Wednesday the 17th at 6 o'clock at the library. It is a public event, and we're very pleased that the former Attorney General, Michael Duffy, is going to launch the event. And the reason Michael Duffy is, he's the one in the Keating cabinet who was the champion who pushed for the ban to be lifted. And the ban was lifted just over 25 years ago for LGB, not for transgender, but the ban was lifted in November of last year. I was really pushing for media to cover it, but marriage equality sucked up all the oxygen. But that's a big thing. 25th anniversary of the ban being lifted. That's the other reason we're doing this exhibition. Yeah.
And it's a free exhibition.
It's free. You don't pay anything.
Yeah.
And Serving in Silence, it's called, at Melbourne City Library, and about the 14th of January, it starts to the 3rd.
3rd of February. February. That date's definite.
And it's part of Midsummer, so you can find out more information on the Midsummer website or in the catalogue.
Yep.
Thanks for coming in.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're here on Joy 94.9 Sunday Arts Magazine.